Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the 9 or 9 podcast. It is nice to have you all back. What? I don't know what I'm saying. Hi, everybody. It's summer.
In your hearts. We'd like to think we're returning to your hearts. Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks. Hi, everyone.
I have sweated a lot in the last month or 3 weeks since I saw you last. There's been a lot of sweating because I've been in hot places and also I'm a hot boy. So it keeps happening. And we were just talking about sweltering heat today, even at home. We're very happy.
What temperature is it? I mean, 17 degrees. I don't know if I can do 17 degrees.
It's very muggy. It's very close today. It's very close.
It's very close. Very fierce close.
That voice you can hear there, of course, is Andrea Cleary. Hi, Andrea.
Hi. And that other one is Niall Byrne. Hi, Niall.
Hello. So we thought we'd have a bit more of a casual chat, seeing it is summer. Everybody is in summer season mode. And we've been on holidays and having good times and being to festivals. And it's the way it should be, to be honest. So, yeah we're gonna basically check in with what's been happening in our worlds of music and the wider world in general. Later on, we'll be talking about Running Up That Hill and Kate Bush and its sudden resurgence due to Stranger Things. But also, we will start with, there's something you want to talk about first, isn't there? Something very important.
Yeah. Harry Styles at FICO with a Tower Records bag full of Guinness. Like, I don't have much to say about it, except that it was nice to see. Matt Damon caught rotting. I'm not going to the gig. No, the tickets were very expensive and I'm not a famous enough journalist to be given a free ticket. Unfortunately, I
severely doubt that. And I think you need to throw your weight around a bit more.
I know. We'll talk about Body and Soul in a few minutes, but I was bringing my friend Nadia to Body and Soul. And we're in her kitchen getting ready to go. And she was like, she turned around and was like, Harry Styles tickets never emerged. What's the story there? And her boyfriend overheard this and walked into the kitchen and was like, she's bringing you to Body and Soul for free and you're bringing up Harry Styles right now. And I was like, do you know what? It's actually completely fair enough. And I let her down. I let myself down and I let the fans down. But I listened to a lot of Harry Styles today, so it's fine. And I've just been looking at the pics of him down doing his swimming with his old Tower Records bag and very happy for him.
Yeah.
Just delighted. Happy for Tower Records as well, because I'm sure there'll be loads of gals going in looking to see, did he sign any records or anything?
Yeah. You know, they are great bags for carrying a heavy load, including cans of Nitro Surge Guinness, I'm sure.
They are. They're very good. And you can fit a good 6 LPs in those Tower Record bags.
You can, yeah.
They're good. Tower Records, if you wanted to ever do a sponsorship, just do get in touch. We are.
They have before.
we're still here.
It is possible. It is possible. Harry goes to the VV, goes down for a bit of a swim. So
Yeah. And I like that he went to Vico, which is definitely like the hipper area. Like he didn't go to the 40 foot.
No. Is that where did Matt Damon go to the 40 foot?
Matt Damon also went to Vico, I think.
Did he go to Vico?
I
yes,
think.
Yes.
Yeah.
I get them mixed up.
Which is also, it's somewhere. Technically a nudie spot, but I don't think either of them got nudie.
Okay. No one got nude as far as we know.
No. I once saw a nudie man there. And that was the day I learned it was a nudie spot. So there you go.
Very good.
But anyway, that's Harry Styles. But I mean, the bulk of what we're going to talk about today is you and I have been very busy. You more so than me. But we've both been to you've been to a festival and a half, and I've been to one festival.
Excuse me, I've been to three festivals.
What's your other festival?
Forbidden Fruit. I was at Forbidden Fruit as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm not counting Body and Soul as a festival for you because you didn't camp.
Oh, I was there for a full 6 hours.
Yeah, that's not, no. Unless you've got back pain, you weren't in Body and Soul.
I do actually have back pain. I attended 3 different festivals in the last 3 weeks. So
You did.
It is nice to get back to it.
What was the first one you went to?
Okay, so yeah, well, I went to Forbidden Fruit because I live nearby and, it had a great lineup. There was some great stuff on it. I went both days? Yeah, I went Saturday and Sunday. It was all just really easy to do. Much younger crowd, obviously, than previously. A lot of people who bought their tickets obviously had bought them in the last couple of years. I really enjoyed the buzz. Saturday was absolutely beautiful. The weather was a cracker. And they, as we know with Irish festivals, and we get on to later with the next festival I'll talk about, having a dependable weather day is hugely important, and it's great. It's absolutely great. I really enjoyed the buzz down there. I really enjoyed, Bicep were the big main stage headliner, and they have a big, I actually saw them on the next festival, so maybe I'll leave it for both of them. So they were great. Saw a bit of Kojak, saw a bit of For Those I Love, Logic 1000. Bored. I saw Lord, yeah, and well, that was a Sunday, so I really enjoyed that. Couldn't get near Peggy Goo. Lord was great, actually. You know, I think she's got she had a bit of negativity around her recent live performance because maybe she shushed somebody once or something. I don't know if that's how much we should be talking about that thing. So you can set the record straight.
What she did was she was singing, and her fans were like screaming back at her lyrics, and then she shushed them so that she could sing the next bit on her own. And then when she went to sing the next bit on her own, she did it quite poorly. And then that went viral, and so it's all very funny.
Okay. So did she mind that they were singing that with it, or did she?
It was kind of like, it's hard to get a read on like what her motivation was for shushing them. But I think it was like, no, I'm going to sing this bit because this bit's like a really important part of the song and I don't want you screaming it.
Kind of hard to dictate at a live gig, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the general consensus that it was an odd thing to do.
Yeah. Well,
which I definitely agree with.
She was very charming at Forbidden Fruit on the Sunday. You know, it was one of those things where the Sunday was not quite as nice as the Saturday weather-wise. It rained an awful lot. It stopped during her set, I think. But it was just a really nice set. You know, she was very talkative. She was very warm. The stage setup that she has is lovely. It's, everyone's dressed in kind of like a mustardy color. And there's like a big... like a pulley system in the middle, and it rotates, and there's a lot of silhouetting, and all the band do a lot of silhouetting and stuff like that. So it was really cool. It was really cool. I really enjoyed it. And so that was great. So in a way, I kind of got to see a couple of things that I thought I would see at the next festival, which I was going to a few days later at Barcelona. That was Primavera Sound, of course. So I was at week 2. As you know, most people, certainly in our Discord anyway, I felt like everyone we know and everyone I knew, there was 2 sets of friends groups that I knew who were going. A lot of my friends went to weekend 1. So we were getting a lot of that weekend 1, day 1 news.
Feedback.
And feedback about what people were, what it was like on the ground. I mean, by all accounts, the day 1 was an absolute shit show for everyone. It, after coming a few days after the Dublin airport fiasco, where people were queuing for hours and hours and hours on the Sunday, that week, it was a bit of big concern for everyone that, you know, it was like everyone was just like, well, nothing works anymore. The world doesn't work anymore. People don't know how to do festivals anymore. They don't know how to do flights anymore. They don't know how to do security anymore. So there was a bit of a worry for that, I think, at the time. But actually, the day one issues were ironed out straight away. I think the Primavera Sound week one comms on day one were quite poor, but there are a number of issues that were brought up. I think a lot of them were basically sorted, but I think a lot of it actually, and I don't think they've said this, but day one, there was a lot of people there to see the likes of, I think it was Tame Impala, and there was another big act that day, which everyone seemed to, maybe it was the Strokes actually. Did the Strokes cancel day one?
Strokes cancelled the first weekend, yeah.
Yeah, so there was a lot of day people in, I think, day tickets, and I think they oversold that. And that led to like the worrying things where, you know, areas where people were feeling there was crushes actually in the smaller stages.
And a lack of water as well in that heat.
Yeah, well, there's water. The water thing is something I have a problem with, because certainly at week two, it was the only issue that I found across the site.
As in you still found it difficult to get water?
Yeah, though it, you know, it's down to being not well signposted or signed at all. And yeah, they did add some water points, but what, 6 water points for 100,000 people is not really a lot, especially when they're not even, and even they're not even on the map properly.
More than that, a body and soul, like.
Yeah. I mean, it's just not enough. It's not enough water. No. So you ended up, every time you go into the bar, you'd buy, you know, a €2 can of water, because it was impossible to find water anywhere else, and or just where it was. Like at one point, there's, well, I guess, I mean, I basically, let me, before I get to that, as I say, weekend one, a lot of the stuff was, seemed to be ironed out very easily. And we will actually share some of our pals in the Discord group, the 99 Discord, some of their experiences as well on that, so they can speak more to that as well. But I know from my friends who were there, certainly one of them, some of them felt like, depends where you were. The big stages were massive, but some of the smaller stages, like somebody said there was a crush at Sharon Van Etten, which shouldn't be happening, you know, like an act like that. It shouldn't be happening. So those kind of things. But I think, and apparently they did turn their bars around very quickly. I think they actually hired because the queues were quite large on day one, and they hired a whole new company to run it. But it does, you know, it speaks to the issues. Like, I guess let's just talk about the music first then, in terms of what I experienced anyway. I've been, my 5th time at Primavera Sound at Barcelona. I saw, as I mentioned, I saw Bicep again. The site is absolutely massive. We're talking, you know, 100,000 people across a site that stretches across, you know, kind of 3 or 4 distinct areas. And one of those areas is quite far away over a bridge. In previous years, you could access the bridge. This year it was for VIPs only. So that was kind of unusual, because that meant, you know, first of all, you weren't able to run between these two different areas, which meant that you weren't going to see the likes of, if you're in one place, say you wanted to go see, you're at Dua Lipa, but you maybe wanted to see the end of Charlie XCX, it just wasn't going to happen. There's no way. There was a lot of that kind of things where you're like, you just have to pick and choose what you're going to see. And I actually didn't mind that this year, because I was there kind of, I wasn't in work mode. I was in there to enjoy myself. I was there with pals. And they weren't pushy on what we wanted to see in particular. But the big two, there's two big main stages. I ended up spending a lot of time there, and I would have rather spent some time in the smaller stages. So I ended up running from the big main stages, which people called Mordor in previous years too. And then what they had done this year is, rather than have them back to front different ends of a football field, essentially, they put them side by side as one structure, and then they put a VIP stage right in front of that, like I couldn't tell you how many meters back, but far enough that it was blocking viewing for anyone who's in the middle at the back of this field, and that essentially means you're just watching a big screen instead of actually experiencing the gig. So we found ourselves moving left and right to the extremes of each stage, because they would just swap over within 5 minutes. Yeah. And
but then that would affect the sound as well. Like if you're
I found the sound was pretty poor there overall. Yeah. I saw like Run the Jewels there, who were, again, one of my highlights. I saw Dua Lipa there, who was great. Megan Thee Stallion was brilliant. A lot of fun. MIA was surprisingly fun. pretty much an assault of MIA tunes. And
I wouldn't be surprised that MIA was fun.
Yeah, no, and I'm not surprised. She was very good. Like, I think I just really enjoyed the set. And then even Gorillaz, I enjoyed that. Although, you know, other people, Saz in the Discord group says week one was quite different. She was actually at both. And then among that, there was like, I was looking for some of the smaller stuff. Couldn't get near the Boiler Room stage without a long, long queue. I saw a Jay Electronica on the first, literally the first thing I saw when I came in with Jay Electronica, who clearly didn't want to be there. And he played like four songs. He played a song off Donda. He started doing a Jay Dilla tribute, and then he played a West Side Gun track. And then he finally did a verse, but he was kept like talking to the crowd and stopping the songs and all this kind of stuff. And you know, this is kind of standard like rap artist stuff a lot of the time, but he got into the crowd at one point and started doing the Jay Dilla thing. Then he got back up and then he seemed a bit like annoyed. So instead he just goes, "All right, everyone just come up here." And you just see this tech guy running out on stage going, no, to everybody.
Oh,
and all of a sudden there's like 300 people on the stage and you're like, well, he's not coming out again. So, I mean, we just left that one, but it was kind of like he was just trying to get to his allotted 20 minutes contracted time. And then he would get paid. It felt a bit like that. Yeah, I mean, I didn't have any major issues across the week. There was a whole other area which I spent a lot of the late evenings in, seeing the likes of Daniel Avery, going out for, I saw a bit of Mall Grab, saw Romy from the XX. We had a lovely, on the last day, on the Saturday, we had some spritzes on the beach while Romy was playing and sat on the beach on some deck chairs. So that was lovely. It was nice to do those kind of things. And I left the festival every morning at 7 a.m. So, you know, it's like I went hard on it. And I think we were lucky enough in terms of transport because it is far enough away. It could be on the metro, it could be on half an hour or 50 minutes or 45 minutes. The one time I got the metro home, we had queued for ages and then we got on it and I was like, I don't know where to get off. So we were like,
oh, no.
We still ended up walking a half an hour from where we were. But I heard worse stories. I was talking to someone who was staying 2 hours walk away and they walked home on the first night.
Oh god,
you know, like Barcelona is a great city to be in. You get a lot of time there to hang out. I went to my favorite tapas place, Cal Pep, twice in 1 week, which was great. And then I did a lot of walking. My phone told me I did 80 kilometers of walking in that week.
Wow.
So it was great buzz. And then, you know, I think just generally, you know, being in a festival which has 32 degrees sun most of the time. But we are not going to the evening until, like, you know, you're not going to 7 or 8 at least to the festival, which goes on till finishes at 6:30 or 7. So you kind of get the like nice warm atmosphere that never dips and you never need a jacket kind of thing. And I think it's just, that never gets old. It never gets old. It never gets old to be like just always warm and always feeling good. But like I said, I think in terms of organizational stuff, there were some things that didn't work for me. There was an area called Bits, which is where some of the bigger stages like Dice and Two Swear, which is where a lot of the late night stuff like Daniel Avery and Mall Crab and a lot of the more dancey area music was. And it was just too far away generally, but we did end up there a lot of times. There was a lot of poor communication around this thing that they had on the Sunday. Not that I was going to make it really, but I think called Brunch on the Beach.
Brunch on the Beach. I saw a lot of angry people. And I will say, as awfully as I think that was run and how bad it was that people thought they had a ticket for it and then didn't.
I think that's the thing. That's poor.
I did find it very funny that there was very serious conversations happening online about something called Brunch on the Beach. It's a bit hard to kind of
Brunch on the Beach.
Where's my Brunch on the Beach? And you know, I'm with the ticket holders on this one, but it was a bit hard to kind of like take the whole thing too seriously.
Yeah, I guess but so. Yeah. Well, there's a thing called Brunch in the park. Though. Well, apparently it's a very family friendly event, and I just think they communicated very poorly on that, as they did a lot during week one when they didn't kind of respond quickly enough about the water. But I think it got to a point with week one where people were just piling on the festival at some point, like because everyone else was. I saw some guy, so there's a natural amphitheater stage there, which is a lovely place. It's a great place to see. Bicep was on there. And the DJ Coco closing set, which is like a real cheesy DJ set with like the DJ literally starts playing Run Up That Hill. And then just like finishes with Journey, Don't Stop Believing. In between is playing like Katy Perry Fireworks while Fireworks goes off. You're like, this is gas.
Oh, just a little wedding stage. Like a wedding DJ stage.
He does it every year.
Sometimes you need that.
Yeah, he does the closing set every year. And it's just like, it's for everyone that's left and flagging maybe a bit. And there's plenty of people there. And it was great fun. It was really nice. But I think that stage, I saw somebody in Weekend One on Twitter when I was kind of getting worried about going to Weekend Two, and I was like, God, what's actually going on? And when I asked my pals, they were like, well, I didn't actually experience anything bad. And then another was like, well, we made some decisions based off how quiet the stage was, not going to somewhere really busy. So, you know, those are considerations that people had who actually paid tickets for a festival and had to wait 2 years. And that's unfortunate.
That's disappointing.
But then the guy I saw who was giving out was like, he posted a video from this amphitheater, and it's a big amphitheater, and there's quite a lot of like a big space in front of it where people can stand in front of the stage, but you can also hang back. And it's one of the nice things actually about Primavera is that you can kind of sit on these steps that go all the way down to, and it's not that high, but I saw some guy who was like, Primavera, what are you going to do about this? This is these steps. People could fall on someone and there could be, you could have a domino effect, and then there would be an awful accident. You're like, those steps have been there for 20 years.
That would be awful.
Yeah, people know how to walk up and down stairs. Like, it happens all the time. Like, it's you're not gonna create a cannonball effect down the stairs, a concrete stairs. You're just not. And it's been there for 20 years, and it's very safe, and I've never seen any issues there. And it's just like that kind of like people pile on everything. But Weekend Two, I have to say, they did turn around very quickly. I think the water points definitely is a sore point for me. There was one point at the start of Primavera Bits when we came in and they were giving away free water, but they were taking the caps off as well. And I just think that's really cheeky. And I saw, and also,
no, but that's awful because you can't refill those bottles, and then each of those bottles is just,
yeah, so you could, same
then
with the fest, coming into the fest, so you could bring in a 330 cl bottle, but without a cap. So it's like, but everyone just ridiculous. Put caps in their pockets. It's fine, but like, it's just a bit silly.
Can I ask as well, if you were to get a beer, what were you giving your beer in? Did you have like reusable cups or anything?
Yeah, they're reusable cups. They're reusable cups, but they don't do, I guess the only thing, which is the bar situation is very bizarre, really. And the more, like, it's been like this every year I've been there, but you kind of put it down to this, you know, Barcelona, continental, Catalan vibe that they have. But when you basically, you know, in an Irish festival, you go up to the bar, there's a big queue system, and there's pre-poured pints. You get your pints and then you leave. At Primavera, what happens is everyone piles into the bar like it's a nightclub in 1995.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And then there's just loads of people who are like, sometimes they did actually have a few bars that had pre-poured pints, but most of the time it wasn't. It was just, you might order three or four drinks from one person and they'd wander up and down this long bar, getting your drinks, going, pouring the pints, getting your gin and tonic or whatever it is. And you're like, lads, this is a wildly inefficient system. And I just can't understand why a festival which has international renown and, you know, had loads of Americans, loads of Irish, loads of English, loads of Europeans all over, huge, is now building out from Primavera to play across the world and do festivals in LA and stuff like that. So I can't understand why they have this system. And I think it has to be just down to a cultural thing that's local, that they just, it doesn't make sense. That's not how you make money for your brands, if that's any concern for you. Or also just make it easier.
Or they poorly chose like who they outsourced the bar thing.
Yeah, well, like I said, apparently they got a new provider on day two to run the bars, and that was a lot better. But still, you know, it falls back on that system. But maybe it's because, you know, they have more bars in general. And I didn't find it that bad really on Weekend Two. Certainly, I was nowhere near 45 minutes, like 5 to 6 minutes for a queue for a bar. Or maybe 15 was probably the most you'd queue for a bar there. But anyway, it was just one of those things, you notice, you're like, this is not the way to run like, let somebody Irish in at this and they'll sort this out immediately.
Do you know what I mean?
We're very good at that. And
we're,
it's also,
we're very good at making sure people get their pints as quickly as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
We are good at that. Yeah.
And yeah, I think the other thing for me, the free water. Yes, there was some free water, but it was also like sitting out in the warm sun. So when you did get it, sometimes you were like, well, this is just warm and I'm not drinking this. You know what I mean? So I think any festival talks about sustainability these days, which, you know, everyone, all the festivals have to, and doesn't let you bring in your own water bottle, there's something missing there. I think there's something
missing. No, that's ridiculous. Yeah, no, I fully agree. And I mean, I was completely spoiled at body and soul for that. I mean, any festival I go to now in the future has a lot to live up to when it comes to sustainability, because truly I was so, so impressed with Body and Soul this year.
Had you been before? Well,
Yeah. I'd been before when it was about 20 or 25,000 people. Mm. So this year it was brought back to 5,000 people. They said that they were completely rethinking what kind of festival it was going to be. A full commitment to sustainability. I think the Leave No Trace campsite was brought up to either 70 or 80%, with the other 20 or 30 being the general camping. No single use plastics allowed into the camp, like in anywhere. It was just, you know, you bring your water bottle, you can bring your cans, no glass or whatever. So everything you brought in had to be brought home with you, and anything that you bought there was 100% compostable or reusable, like the reusable cups. So on the first day we got a drink, pay one extra euro for the cup, and then that's your cup for the weekend. You reuse it, and then they ask you not to bring it home, to return it at the end so that the cups can be used again at other festivals or next year, or they can be kind of used at different events, which I just thought was such a brilliant idea. And everyone was happy about it. And because they have a free flow system as well, everyone, you can bring your own alcohol into like the arena area from the campsite. There's no, I remember going to Electric Picnic years ago, and you weren't allowed to bring your campsite alcohol into the main arena to encourage you to like buy at the bars. So it meant that there was no queues for any bar. I mean, on the Saturday night, there's a Body and Soul, I think it's just called the Body and Soul Bar, near the main stage, beside the Beacon stage. And like, I looked over and there was two staff, like there was people serving people, but there was two other staff just like standing and having a chat with each other. And it was just like, that's how quiet the bars were. Like, it was Saturday night and nobody was buying a drink, because everyone already had like their own stuff that they could bring in. There were bins everywhere. There were water points everywhere. Like, it was, I was just so, so impressed with like the sustainable aspect of it. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. And then when we were leaving on Monday morning, we were in the Leave No Trace campsite. And when I say people left no trace, like it looked as if like the grass had barely been disturbed. Like, it looked like it was just a field again. And I mean, you know yourself, been to Irish festivals before, and we didn't have a washout, so that does help. Like, we had some rain on Friday, but you know yourself, when you're leaving, you're like, oh God, there's plastic cups everywhere. There's people's crisp packets and cans. And like, it was just everybody in both campsites really took the Leave No Trace thing to heart, because it would have actually been difficult to make a mess there because of all of the stuff they'd put in place for you to not be able to do that.
I thought it was smart as well. On the way in, they had a picture of a really bad campsite and essentially like, don't do this.
Yeah, bring your tents with you when you're going home, which you'd imagine would be like the least that you could do, but some people don't. Some people leave their camping chairs, some people leave all these things for other people to kind of deal with. But no, I was so impressed. And yeah, I think the crowd was like a little bit older. I'd say everybody there was at least over 25. But I'd say the average age would have been like 30 plus, which was nice as well, because, you know, you just kind of...
Yeah, that's a difference for all the festivals we're talking about here, because Body and Soul was like that. Primavera was like that as well, probably. A lot of people in their late 20s, early 30s, and later, like me, late 30s. And for Rinford, it was like a much younger crowd as well, early 20s.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
But like, everyone was, I saw, you know, it was all very respectful as well, thankfully. So,
yeah. I mean, I have like basically only two issues with Body and Soul, and they are so minor that I'll get them out of the way now. One is that they moved the Beacon stage over to the left-hand side of the main stage, which it was in a fine area. It just meant DJs that were playing there during the day couldn't really draw a crowd because the main stage was just there. And it's also the first thing you see when you walk out of the campsite. So you might be more inclined to like go for a walk around and see what else is on rather than hang around that DJ. But also that stage plays really, really late at night and it's right beside the campsite. So if they had to put it on the other side,
that's not a problem for most people, Andrea.
When I tell you, people went to bed early at Body and Soul. Like, it was, I mean,
By people, do you mean you?
I mean me, but I mean also like a lot of other people. The campsite was like, yeah, people were going to bed. I was saying goodnight to people walking back to my
what
tent.
Time did the music go on there?
At the Beacon, I'll tell you now. At the Beacon stage, so like two, like the last act starting at 2:15 sort of thing, so late. Or last act starting at like 2:30 or something. Which is late enough if they're playing for an hour and then an extra half an hour of one more tune at the end. Like it does put
you don't you go to festival, go to bed though. I'm sorry.
No, I know. I know that, Niall. But also I don't go to festivals to not sleep. That's not the festival goer I am. I like to do things during the day and I like to see bands and I like to sleep at night. And it was just like one small tweak, which would have been just leaving the Beacon stage over at the other side where it was initially.
Where was it before?
Would have made it. It used to be on the other side of the main arena before they moved.
Oh yeah, when they closed
stage,
that entire area was much smaller now.
So that's
we're talking
my
less than 5,000 people. So therefore, that big second area where the big top was, the absolute area, all the concession stands and stuff like that.
Well,
and
that's my other issue.
Place. Yeah.
My only other issue, and I've absolutely no problem with there not being like big, gaudy, like Smirnoff stands at festivals, but the only other issue was that there wasn't a great selection. If you wanted to like buy a drink, if you wanted to get like a nice drink, you could basically only get like a gin cocktail or a whiskey cocktail, and there wasn't really
it was a Hennessy area for the brandy.
Yeah, okay, well yeah, brandy, whiskey, the kind of dark liquors or whatever. There wasn't really much by way of like, if you just wanted to like get a cocktail, it was kind of just like the cocktail was like, have a whiskey and Coke or have a whiskey and orange or whatever, which for me was fine. But I was with someone who doesn't drink like whiskey, and she was like, oh, I'd like a cocktail, but there wasn't any for her, which is, again, such a minor thing. And it like these minor issues will go to show you like how well run the rest of the festival was, because those are my only gripes with it. Like it was so brilliant. It was so well organized. There was loads of like wherever you went at any point on any of the days, there was loads of really cool like queer stuff happening. There was a pride parade on the Sunday. There was a brilliant queer cabaret show on one of the stages on the Saturday, I think, with two gals called Wild Geese, who were just so hilarious and brilliant. There was a drag show as well, which is excellent. And then, yeah, the main stage stuff was excellent as well. The best day was definitely Saturday. Saturday at the main stage was basically just go to the main stage for six and stay there. So it was CMAT, then Pillow Queens, then Mother DJs, then Roisin Murphy. I bopped off for Mother DJs, because I've seen them before and you can see them in Dublin. And I went to see Pop Dungeon instead on one of the smaller stages, which is our pals, Louise Bruton and Ashton O'Riordan, which was great, which was absolutely brilliant. And Roisin Murphy was really good. Like, yeah, she was good. She had cool costume changes and stuff. They maybe could have done with a screen on either side of the main stage. Because if you wanted to see anything, you kind of had to go up onto the hill or go really close to the front. And if
issue with that stage, and I think they need to address that, because the second or third time now that I've been there with that stage, third time I think, and it used to just be in the hollow at the end of the hollow in the middle of that whole space, and it felt, I don't know, the feng shui feels a little off. And on Sunday when the weather was so nice, it was casting a shadow. The actual stage itself cast a shadow immediately over the first like 100
meters. I was at Kneecap on the Sunday, and there was like a sliver of light coming through this one side of the stage, and I just kept moving along with the light to stay in the sunshine.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, it's a big consideration.
That was a problem. Yeah, yeah.
And I think that the Beacon stage is obviously, when they moved it to that field in order to kind of address the size and use it more. Yeah, but you can only alternate between the two. And I think where that worked well was late into the night when Beacon became its own thing, and things like that Pagan Rave was on, or maybe Optimal.
Yeah, I didn't really know what to make of the Pagan Rave. I had such mixed reviews from people at the campsite about it. I was like, did you go to the Pagan Rave? I was like, I was there for the beginning and towards the end, like a few songs towards the end. And I liked it, but like, it, I don't know what was pagan about it, except the costumes. Like, I was just like,
I think that's
the
word, that's it.
The
yeah,
word but, pagan, I don't know, seems to be doing a lot of heavy lifting there. Maybe the stuff I don't know about that.
Well, yeah, I think it comes from the Altona one in Dingle. I think it's the same people who do that one.
So yeah.
It's very much, it's modernized a lot in the last few years and become yeah. a whole thing itself.
I was just like, turn up the pagan, turn down the rave. And I think that would be a nice balance yeah. for this. But at that point in the night, a lot of people were just very excited to be dancing, I think.
Yeah.
And maybe wouldn't have wanted a pagan thing. But I mean, I saw some Shannos dancing during the day, which is beautiful. We saw some, what else did we see? Just like beautiful little things.
I know
readings.
You posted a picture of the little book, the
big little book nook. I yeah. kept going back and the lady either wasn't there or there was somebody in there with her. And I really wanted to get my little book recommendation, but I didn't. We had an appointment for a shamanic healing experience on the Sunday at 3 o'clock. And then at about 2:15, we decided that we were too scared to do it. We didn't know how seriously it would be. And we were just kind of a bit giddy at that
This
stage,
wasn't so. The John Hopkins thing, was it?
Because that No.
As well.
No, that was booked out.
Yeah.
Although I heard if you go up, you could yeah. have gotten in, but it was just listening to the album or whatever.
Well, I saw it. I went in and had a look. There was a lot of people lying down in an open tent and there was a guy
yeah.
hitting something around them. And that was part of the whole John Hopkins thing, apparently. So,
lovely.
There you go.
Yeah. I didn't do much in the sanctuary, actually. I went down for a look and it was beautiful. And completely different vibe to the rest of the place. Like it was all very serious and there are serious things happening and there are kind of, you know, yoga classes happening and stuff, which I love, and good for them. And I had big plans to do them. And then I just, you know, how these things go, people don't want to do it or you don't want to do it or whatever. But act of the weekend was CMAT. Like I include John Hopkins in that. I include Roisin Murphy in that when it comes to like stage presence, star power. She was even better than she was when I saw her in the Academy. The crowd like wouldn't let her get off the stage. She ran over time because they wouldn't stop singing "I Want to Be a Cowboy" at her while she was trying to introduce the band. And she kept calling us very, very bold words, and it just made everyone go even wilder. It was great. And even that night back at the campsite, when you'd be talking to your neighbors, whatever, like you just hear people saying to each other, "Did you see CMAT? Did you see CMAT?" Like that was the big draw of the day. And she was visibly moved, I think, by the reaction from the crowd. She seemed surprised that she drew such a big crowd as well. And then, yeah, on the Sunday, the Mary Wallopers being the surprise act was absolutely brilliant and had a great little bop to them. And yeah, just bravo, Bonnie and Soul. It was certainly the best run festival I've ever been to. I know I haven't been to loads, but like it was, I always felt safe. And like as somebody who we've spoken on the podcast before, as somebody who has a lot of anxiety about like crowds and just even camping in like a space with a lot of other people and being at gigs where there's a lot of people and a lot of drunk people in particular and people who might be like on drugs, and I get a bit anxious about stuff like that. I always felt safe. Like it didn't feel like there was a security guard ever too far away or a staff member ever too far away. If I did need something, the stages felt small enough that I could get out if I wanted to. And there was loads and loads and loads of quiet little spots to go and sit and regroup and have a chat with your pals, which are, as we know, the best parts of all festivals is.
Yeah.
When you find a little spot and you're sitting down and you're just chatting shit for an hour and you miss a big band.
Definitely. And I think, you know, it's worth remembering because, you know, across all the festivals I went to, there was definitely some good hang time happened at it. Well, a Primavera. Unfortunately, CMAT was on a 5:30 in the afternoon on the day two, and it was just too early to, because they would have to go really early and then stay there and then, It was just, you have to make a decision about, well, like, am I going to go see Matt and then miss out on a nice dinner or like 3 more hours in the city? Do you know what I mean? So
I see what you mean. Yeah.
And then like there was nothing between CMAT and for another 3 hours. So you're like, well, we're going to have to wait around here. So I did miss CMAT then at Primavera, but all accounts were good. Obviously a lot of Irish people showed up as you'd expect. I think with Bonnie Soul,
I saw her tweeting that the, She could tell the Irish in the crowd because they were all over in the shade under like a tree or something, which was very funny.
Absolutely. But yeah, and I think Bodinsall on Sunday, certainly when I was there, suffered a little bit from some cancellations which weren't of their own fault, but I think they did well
bringing
the Captain Mary Wallopers in. But Sampath the Great
definitely
pulled out. Mogwai lost all their gear but still managed to play with Bar.
Yeah, I didn't catch much of Mogwai because I wanted to stay and watch Mogwai. There wasn't a whole, you know, big effect on their sound that I could tell. I mean, they weren't as loud as I was expecting them to be. And maybe if I'd stayed for the whole set, I would have noticed them not having their own gear. But I saw a bit of it, but the people I was with kind of wanted to go and dance and I didn't want to be on my own. So I went dancing. I saw, who was it on Sunday night that I saw who was absolutely brilliant? And I'd say, I imagine you'd know her.
You see Remy Wolf?
No.
Remy Wolf.
Kelly Lee Owens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Kelly Owens is great.
On the Woodland stage was absolutely brilliant. Like, so, like, really great presence. Oh, that was the day you were there, wasn't it? Because you saw Donnie.
Yeah, I wanted to stay, but I couldn't stay. I was driving home and I was like...
Yeah, no, she was on at 11:15, so it's quite late.
I left when Mogwai were starting and that was my third festival in 3 weeks and I was like, that's...
Fair enough,
That's enough. Oh, my girlfriend
was absolutely brilliant. And then overhead the Albatross were on after her, but it was 1 a.m. and I was tired, so I didn't go to that.
But really important question I want to ask you about your festival experience is, what did you eat?
Oh my God, that's the other thing. The food was stunning. So I had these I had nachos twice, but from two different places, so it's okay. Beautiful vegan chili nachos. Beautiful.
Did you go to Ixca? The Mexican place and that was included on board.
Yes, that's where I got the nachos and little like what do you call them, like little tortilla things.
Yeah, just
on the first day.
Tacos.
Oh my God, like absolutely delicious. Really set the bar high for food for the weekend. That place. That was the first thing we ate. Because we brought down our own lunch for that day. We brought sandwiches, and it was fabulous. Like even the pizza from the Big Blue Bus was gorgeous. Like the food was impeccable. It was remarkable. And like, because I'm vegetarian, but I mostly eat vegan. Like I'll eat vegetarian if I have to. But there was loads of vegan food for me to eat. All of the stuff was like compostable and like easy to do. So it was brilliant. It was really great. Yeah, the food was gorgeous. What did you have? Did you have something from the Mexican?
Well, the Mexican place was the first place we went to as soon as we arrived. Yeah. You're like, okay, I've heard about this and I want to go. And it was lovely. It was so nice.
Really lovely.
Yeah, just really good tacos. And, you know, they had some kind of quinoa chili thing in it as well as the pork. Mm. And
great coffee.
Chili. Yeah, oh, I didn't have any
around
coffee.
The place.
In terms of drinks, place beside Ixca, which... I would always like look for
the kombucha place.
Yeah, my goodness, just the kombucha stand. The Cork guys, they're great, and they always. I was driving on Sunday, and it's really nice to be able to get a drink that isn't, you know, a 7-Up or.
I thought of doing and then forgot to do, which is annoying, was they were doing alcohol-free like mocktails with their kombucha, but with like ice and stuff because you couldn't get ice anywhere. And I was thinking, oh, we should get one of them and then bring it to the campsite and put our own spirits in it, and then we have
put a bit of spirit in it if you want.
I didn't even think, but yeah, I was like, oh, we should do that and then we'll have like a nice cold, because we were making cocktails at the tent, like we brought stuff to make cocktails in our little reusable cups, but like of course everything was warm and you couldn't get ice anywhere, so I did think to do that. So next year I will absolutely do that, because next year I will 100% be going back to Bodinsall. I really hope they keep it at 5,000. I really liked that level of people. Made it easy to meet up with friends if you did get lost or anything. Not that I ever did, but you know, if you get separated or something, go meet up with your pals and it's really easy. And it was brilliant. It was the best run festival I've ever been at. And thanks for sending me Bodinsall, because I didn't have to buy a ticket. But they didn't make me say any of this either.
Did you Are you going to go to any other festivals this year, do you think, based on that? Are you, is that enough for you?
I think I'm open to another love story. I think I'm open to that because that's smaller still, isn't it?
It is, yes. It's very small. Maybe 500 max.
Wow, okay. Yeah, I think what I want is a festival where there's 20 people there. I think that's my ultimate experience.
Well, it's as small as you might find around the place, but maybe not.
You just go and throw one in the park. Yeah, but I think I'm definitely open to that. I think up to 5,000. I'm like, yeah. But I think hearing from everyone with Primavera, I know that there were issues in the first weekend this week, but I think Primavera could be something that I do because you stay off site.
Yeah, so I mean, that makes a big difference.
If you needed to get out of the environment, you can go. And
when I said I spent the last 3 weeks sweating in the last 3 weeks, because a lot of it is because I stayed in an apartment that, I had blackout blinds, but it was just so warm. We had a rooftop apartment and it was lovely.
Oh, wow. But,
oh my God, I have never been so warm all the time. It was great as well. It was, at the same time, it was great. So not something to really worry about too much, but just, everything was good. Everything was nice. Everything felt good.
Good.
All the festivals, nice to be back at a festival, feeling normal again.
It was, even when we, as soon as we put up our tent and sat down in our chairs, I was looking around and I was like, because it had been a while since I'd been to a festival, COVID or not, it had been a couple of years before that as well, because I had like a really bad experience at a festival that just set me off not wanting to go to any anymore. And I sat down at the campsite and I was just kind of looking around, everyone else putting up their tents, a few people starting to crack into their cans. The sun was out a little bit, like it had just stopped raining. And I was like, oh, I remember how to do this. I remember now what this is like. And this is a really nice feeling to be at the beginning of a weekend of like good music and good food and people and sleeping outside. And like it was really lovely.
Great. Yeah, more to come for me anyway. Before we move on to Kate Bush, just to say, here's some feedback from some of our Discord regulars. Saz says about Primavera. First Primavera, and hopefully won't be the last, but it may be the last of doing both weekends. That was a lot. She did two weekends. That is a serious amount.
Yeah, absolute. Trooper of the week goes to Saz. Like, what a legend doing both and weekends.
Owen, the first two people here actually did both weekends, and I met Owen O'Sullivan actually on the last day. And I was just like, fair play to you for doing absolutely everything. Saz also said, first few hours of the first Thursday was genuinely hell on earth and genuinely fearful there could be a dangerous crushing at any moment. Highlight that night was probably Tame Impala breaking out into Strokes last night as the crowd in the queues with Bar finally showed some signs of release. However, I was really impressed that it turned around, but a real shame for people only there for three nights. Staff were all lovely and good spirited throughout the whole festival, wiping under massive pressure and working long hours. Mentions the distance to the two stage was a bit off putting as well, which is fair. And there was a car park stage, which you mentioned. The car park was a weird, sweaty, hot buzz for all the 20 minutes I could hack it. Now, this is at the NTS stage at the festival, and we tried to go a couple of times, and because I remember I went to the Egyptian Lover there a few years ago, and it was so much crack, but it was like oppressively warm in this underground car park, so you were not going to stay there for a lot longer.
That sounds awful. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, that's it. I don't remember being like that the last time. Do you know what I mean?
One of the most beautiful cities in the world to go to an underground car park and listen to some music?
I know, like, but you are beside the sea and you're like, oh, this could be a buzz, and it has potential, but it was way too warm. Owen from The Point of Everything says, site felt a little stretched this year and crowd too big, but maybe that's us getting all used to the crowds again post-pandemic. He had some highlights. First night was a shocker due to slow bar staff, but still got to see Casey Mudgraves and Charlie XCX for a hard pivot to Muscly Metalers, The Armed. Ridiculous in the best way. And Fred again was just as revelatory as I had been hoping for. I actually did see Fred again as well, and Jesse Ware. Both of those were great. I think that was the last day. Really enjoyed that. As you expect from Owen, he would say Fontaine's DC killed it.
Owen.
And Lord was special. There's something so joyous about a big pop act like that and screams from the crowd. I loved it. The food court was great, which is good shout. I had some empanadas from there. Loads of choice, plenty of seating, and all covered Irish festivals. Please take note. Burnsy from Discord says, went boat weekends.
Burnsy has a good tip for people. best timing for Metro would be 50 minutes. And the vast majority of the time leaving the festival was hellish. So,
yeah.
About don't go further out than 50 minutes.
I think so. I think that's probably the most. I was actually very lucky. Most nights we got a taxi home, easy enough. And sometimes they didn't charge us. Well, most times they didn't charge an exorbitant amount. It was only 12 quid in a taxi, but sometimes the taxi guys were haggling and they were looking for 30 or 50 quid. So like, it really just depends.
God, you know, I hate haggling.
But see, here's the difference. Like Burnsy says, I never had an issue getting the free water from the additional stand whenever I saw them. I think I didn't have the problem getting the water. It's just I don't think they were well marked enough after being given out to for so much in the first few days. They really could have turned it around. Again, mentions nice food, fried chicken, empanadas, Korean beef burgers in the food hall. That really nice.
Also did 2 weeks. Also the 2 weeks were a great experience for a one-off. Three, however, probably never do it. Do another festival for that length again, and would also seriously reconsider how I do urban festivals in future. I'd almost certainly bring a blanket and something cushiony if I have any inkling that I'd be sitting down at any stage. Being sick when I got back has probably affected my views, but I'm just happy that I wasn't sick over there.
I mean, they did put a lot of, down a lot of AstroTurf on the main areas, which makes it a bit easier because in previous years, certainly people were complaining about
it. Is AstroTurf not horrible to sit down on? Is that not that really awful?
No, it was fine. It was a bit softer. It didn't feel like you would sit down on it. It was okay. Yeah.
Okay.
And it also makes it a bit, I don't know, the uniformity of it all makes it a bit easier in terms of no matter where you sit, you're kind of fine. And people weren't like, you know, there wasn't dirt everywhere either. So that helps. Seamus says he was at Nos Primavera on the Thursday as well, and he said the best moment was walking in to see happy festival crowds milling about after so long away. Didn't expect it to have such an effect on me. I was beaming for about 10 minutes until my cheeks hurt. Return of good festival vibes, and mentions Caroline Polacek as an example or a highlight. I would have loved to see her. Definitely one of the ones on weekend one I really wanted to see, and very much enjoyed. And actually, No Spring Vera sounds really nice, as the grounds are beautiful. Does. A more spacious Kilmainham with punters already sat on the hillside enjoying the sun. 4 stages and a dance warehouse space, all at most 5 minutes away from each other. A Cot Spelling and a great Stella Donnelly set. 3 of them, 4 main stage acts on the first day are Australian, oddly. Fiona, who I met at Primavera week 2, Fiona says, Strokes, Lord, Romy, can't wait for ATN set, sad, Banger Central, Jesse Wop, Jesse Ware, bop after bop. And he said, Jesse Wop, bop after bop. Bicep and DJ Coco, great way to end as I was running out of steam at that point. I ended up seeing the Beak DJ set on the Tuesday night because we ran into Root Mesburn and all the Irish pals on the first night, and ended up back at one of the between festival gigs. But Fiona actually properly went to see the 4AD showcase, which was Maria Somerville, Dry Clean, and Erica DeCassier, and paid 15 in advance to guarantee access. The queues were long, but I thought that was to be expected. My friend's queue at Razzmatazz had gone into Megan Thee Stallion and said it was unreal. But that's great. I really enjoyed that. Yeah. She says, I enjoyed getting to explore the city a bit during the day, ate very well, but getting to and from the festival wrecked the buzz a bit. Surprisingly, maybe missed crawling into a tent to stay into that festival bubble. Made me excited to be back at Irish festivals. Very good. And finally, Colm says, someone told me DJ Coco opened with Kate Bush. I can't believe we were robbed on weekend one. And his highlights were Little Sims, who I still haven't seen live yet, Tyler, 100 Gex, and even Kenny Beats, where he was DJing, the stage collapsed. But it was a moment anyway. Grill's way better than I give him credit for. I had next to no hype about it. And end up being one of my favorites most of the festival. Like Yassine Bey coming out for Stylo. He also came out with Crime Bin as well, which I watched on YouTube earlier on today because I missed that. And seeing Megan Thee Stallion in the 2000 Cab venue also in the running. So I think, the only other festival we haven't mentioned because we personally weren't there, but I was talking to another few pals who were there, was the inaugural Beyond the Pale Festival in Wicklow in Glendalough. And I think, I heard good reports about it. Heard there were some sound issues and some generator issues during some of the main sets, like Bonobo and Orbital. But generally, heard overall positive things about the first outing of that festival, which, you know, it is a hard thing to come back this year because, you know, I think there was mixed reports about festivals this year. So if you're on the fence about going to a festival this year, you know, be assured that any festival happening in the next few months will happily take your money and give you a good time, I'm sure. So
thanks everyone in the Discord for your thoughts and for keeping us up to date while you're away. I was having quite a bit of FOMO, but also very happy to see that people were having a good time. Yeah. I didn't do any of that when I was at Body and Soul because I don't have the Discord app on my phone.
Fair play. I
should do that. I should get it. But yeah, thanks everyone for that. And if you want to join the Discord, go to the Patreon, patreon.com/909 and join us. It's really, like we say it every week, it's a lovely buzz. It's a really nice buzz.
Do you know what else is a lovely buzz?
What's a lovely buzz?
The return of Kate Bush's Run Not That Hill and the fact that it's now number one in the
UK. I know.
Isn't it brilliant?
Kate.
We know why this has happened. You know why it's happened. Stranger Things has brought this song back in a big way, using the episode in one of the
episode 5
seasons.
I think.
Yeah, it was used twice actually, but episode 5 is the big one where the character Max uses a totem for her favorite song to get away from this. What's his name in it?
Vaguk. No.
the monster in it. So a version of Run Up That Hill was used in the episode.
And a brilliant version as well. I really hope that they release the...
That's it. That's an additional one. I don't think they will because that has the strings. A lot of the time when you...
I like it.
Yeah, it has extra strings added to the montage on the show for extra effect. Mm. But certainly... it does.
It's also used in the new trailer for part 2 of the season.
Oh, is it? So apparently it's going to be the song going to be shown again, apparently.
Probably.
That's what I read today. It might end up again being used.
Yeah.
So,
but today, as we record, Kate Bush was on Auntie Beeb this morning on Women's Hour, giving a very, very rare interview. And I got really emotional when I started listening to it because she just sounds really happy, really overjoyed and really grateful that there's a whole new generation of kids who are discovering her. Like there was all this awful, like all these awful takes, like at first when this whole thing was kind of first hitting of people being like, oh my God, I can't believe these kids don't know who Kate Bush is. But like, come on, like cop on, stop gatekeeping good music from kids and also let kids discover music. Like, were you born knowing who Kate Bush was? No. And she seemed to put a lot of that attitude to rest. Like she was so grateful and enthusiastic about kids being into her. And I mean, like the idea of witch talk was brought up to her and she just said like, oh, that sounds ridiculous but amazing and I love it. So yeah, it was just so great to hear her sound so happy and healthy, and she's gardening and she's doing her stuff.
Loves gardening. Doesn't have a kitchen disco dance anyway, by the sound of it.
No, she doesn't. She doesn't have a phone that can receive emails, which I was really pleased to hear. She just sounds great. I was really happy that she did that interview because like, she didn't have to. You could tell she didn't have to, but
yeah. Well, I think she was just so into it, and she loves the show as well. And what she said about it is like, you know, I really liked people to hear a song and take from what they want. But originally, it was written as the idea of a man and woman swapping with each other just to feel what it was like from the other side. So it goes on to say, by featuring Running Up That Hill in such a positive light as a talisman for Max, song has been brought into the emotional arena of her story. I'm overwhelmed by the scale of affection and support the song is receiving and all that's happening really fast. It's been driven along by a kind of elemental force. That was a statement she released last week as well. But I thought it would be nice to just give the song, you know, not that this song is like one of my favorite songs of all time anyway, and I'm delighted to hear it back again. But I thought it'd just be nice to give it a bit of time, give it its flowers, and just discuss it a little bit and what's so great about it.
Did we talk about it on our Kate Bush episode, which is one of the first episodes
we must have,
that we did when I joined the podcast? I think maybe like the third or fourth episode we did was around her birthday. And we did, we talked about some Kate Bush songs, but I can't remember.
That was 2018 now. So I think we can have a little chat about
definitely
so much. So I guess, you know, I mean, it's a very affecting song. I think one of the reasons why it works so well in Stranger Things is because of, obviously Stranger Things music is known for the theme song by the band Survive. And there's actually a lot of similarities between that kind of 80s inspired John Carpenter synth horror score and the music of Kate Bush. Here is a little bit of a song from Kate Bush's Hounds of Love album, the same album that gives us Running Up That Hill. And this is called Waking the Witch. And you'll hear essentially what sounds like an audio horror happening in that one. So there's a very like very much a growling demonic voice in that you know, kind of speaks to. I wouldn't be surprised that it ends up getting used in the finale for Stranger Things. Well, it's so suitable to it. But I guess the other thing about it, you know, is that, you know, that song, the synths on that song, and a lot of this Hounds of Love album, especially, you know, it works so well because it does tie in with the musical landscape of what Survive have done, you know, the darkness, there's a lot of that kind of stuff. There's a song on the album called After Ice as well, or Under Ice, sorry, which was has a similar vibe to it. But I think Running Up That Hill as
the whole side B is quite horror driven. It is
It's got its own little encapsulated section, really,
narrative.
So the thing about Running Up That Hill as well, I think, you know, she actually mentions it in the BBC interview today, was talking about the Fairlight synth, a digital synthesizer sampler and workstation, which she had used in 1985 on this song as well. And there's a lot of these kind of synth pads and things like that you can hear in the song, which, you know, are very modern. They're very modern techniques. And I think they have lasted a long time. And every now and again, you get those kind of, if you just think about the elements of this song, this kind of synthy pads that happen in the song, these also the Lindrum, the drum machine that's used, that is a machine that is used an awful lot now, as well as the drum itself, the drum machine itself. There's a great video that Vox have made on over the years. They've done a great series, but one called How a Recording Studio Mishap Shaped 80s Music.
Until 1979, that's when Peter Gabriel was recording his third solo album. His Genesis bandmate Phil Collins was on the drums playing a simple beat. And here's where something magical happened. So according to their engineer, Hugh Padgham, they had a brand new recording console with some cool features that included a mic hanging in the studio to talk to the band. That mic accidentally picked up Phil's drums, and the result was this thick, punchy reverb that disappeared in an instant. The reason? Well, the mic had a heavy compressor on it, which reduces the volume of loud sounds and amplifies quiet ones. It sort of crunches a waveform. And the console had a noise gate, which only lets amplitudes above a certain threshold pass through. And then it immediately shuts off. The result was such a crazy sound that Peter Gabriel wrote his album opener Intruder around it.
Thank you.
Now, if you don't know Intruder, you'll certainly recognize this, made by Phil Collins and Hugh Padgham a year later.
Details how basically the gated reverb sound came into fruition, but the Lindrum and the gated reverb technique, a lot of it was used on big 80s pop hits. Again, obviously this show is set in the 80s, has a lot of that kind of audio tapestry on it. So I'm thinking about like songs like Queen, Radio Gaga, Miami Sound Machine, Dr. Beat, Prince, When Doves Cry. Inner City, Good Life, Madonna, Burning Up. A lot of these songs, Matumi, Juicy Fruit, a lot of those songs, Aha, Take On Me. Have the Lindrum as part of its, you know, main instead of live drums. So it really, in terms of defining an era, those kind of sounds really do define that era. And
yeah. She was also a pioneer of kind of electronic sampling in popular music as well, and sort of like seamlessly blending it with like pop styles.
Like, yeah, I mean, she's an eccentric artist and still is, because she
came out the gate eccentric, so it was kind of like anything she did would be accepted, because if your first song is Wuthering Heights, you can go anywhere from there, because it was so left field. Like, it was like, where the hell is she going to go? But then on this album in particular, it was really the first time that we heard her kind of blossom with all of this like electronic sampling equipment that she was obsessed with and really, you know, excited by and excited to use in her music. And it was really lovely to hear her in that interview today talk about, you know, she was saying the world right now is very difficult, but it's also so wonderful with the advancements in technology. And she wasn't only talking about music, you know, she mentioned, you know, scientific breakthroughs in medicine. You have to think that she's talking about the COVID vaccine there, among other things. But it was really nice to hear that she's still excited about the future of technology in the music space as well, because, you know, once a pioneer, always a pioneer. Once a music tech geek, always a music tech geek. And I think that she'll always be that. I think that's really nice. That was a really nice little element in the interview today, that she is keeping an eye on interesting music that's happening now, which is so nice.
And of course, it isn't the only time that this song has had a return. Certainly, it's the biggest return the song has had. But in 2012, the song was actually reworked for the London Olympics. And as Kate mentioned in that interview, sometimes she does revisit those songs, although she said she hasn't heard this song prior to this in quite a while. But a re-recorded version of this song, which is also on Spotify, which you can hear, was released in 2012 for the London Olympics. Key differences in the song is, well, the song is in a different key. It was newly recorded. It was transposed down a semitone to fit Kate Bush's lower vocal range at the time in 2012. And then it was used in the closing ceremony of the Summer Olympics. So completely new recorded vocals, and also moves the outro hook, which I love, to the start, but a very different vibe here. So it uses a backing track of the extended version of the 1985 12-inch single. So just a slightly different version. So let's play a bit of that.
Okay, that's a bit of the 2012 version. And if anyone is listening, and you know, I've obviously seen 616 million plus views or plays of this song on TikTok alone. So I mean, one of those actual kind of like the Fleetwood Mac Dream thing, except for much bigger, because it's a bit much bigger cultural moment. It's harder to have a cultural moment in 2022 than it used to be because of the fractured way in which we take in media and we take in songs. But like, TikTok has a lot to answer for here, and certainly the show combined with TikTok and its use has really helped it spread far and beyond. And I've seen some very funny things that are like, here's the house remix, here's the techno remix, here's the tech house remix, here's the R&B version, you know what I mean? But if you're looking for good remixes, I'm going to tell you two right now, two long established ones that every DJ needs are the Ashley Beadle one and the Patrice Bommel one, which are both great. They're both extend the song to like 7.5 minutes and just really amp up the percussive parts of it. So here's a bit of the Ashley Beadle. So really, that Ashley Beadle one is more just an edit than anything else. It just does lovely things with the lovely textures in that song. It's like, I love the way that these chugging guitars use, and it kind of used a lot of the phrasing and the effects, the vocal effects, to a nice use, and then kind of just amps up some of the rhythmic elements of it as well without changing anything drastically. And I think that's the best way. You don't really want to mess with this song too much at all. So absolutely good examples of that. But anything else you want to add on Running Up That Hill for now?
Nope, just go listen to it. And if you are someone who is younger, hello. And also, we do have an episode on, it was underrated Kate Bush tracks.
Yes.
That's, I'd recommend listening to that. But also, Kate's worth getting into even if you're not younger and you're just someone who never really got around to listening to Kate Bush. Hounds of Love is an excellent album to start with, but there are others too. Go forth, enjoy, report back to us, tell us how you feel about it. But she is absolutely worth getting into. She's one of a kind, and she's probably my favorite artist of all time.
What a legend. I think those gigs in London are the only ones I actually regret never. I think I've never,
best not to think about it,
something so much. Yeah, but yeah. Look, whatever, though, it wasn't the right time for me to see Kate Bush then, so maybe it'll happen again, maybe it won't, but if it doesn't, that's fine. It's like the way I don't even need to watch the music video, even though the music video for the song is great, because it's just like, it's the song is evocative enough as it is that I don't really need anything else.
I think her hair and her clothes in the Running Up That Hill music video. Actually, no. My favorite Kate Bush, like my favorite that she's ever looked in a music video, is the Hounds of Love music video with the big curly hair and the blazer jacket. And I just think that's what I want to look like forever. I'm going to get a perm this summer, basically. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, do it.
Sorry, you were going to ask me something there.
I was just going to ask you what you thought then of the other big new hit. The new Drake album. No, of course not. I'm not going to ask you about the Drake
album.
You
always do this to me. Why do you do
this? I'm not going to do it to you. But I want to ask you about the Beyonce album. And before I do, the Beyonce song. I'm going to ask you about the Beyonce song. Before I do, I'm going to tell you that I listened to the Drake album, so you didn't have to.
And thank you.
You would absolutely hate it, I think.
would I? Why would I hate it?
Oh, it's just so bland. I found it really bland. It's like a man devoid of ideas. That's what it sounds like to me. He barely raps on it, and there's some awful lyrics on it, as you'd expect. But mostly it's just like, okay, he's got some house music a bit more now. And everyone's like, oh, it's house music season. Everyone's using house because Beyonce has
sampled a house song on her new song as well. So you're like, oh, well, everyone's like, well, it's house music is back. I was like, sorry, house music never went anywhere. Americans are just weird about dance music. The music that they actually created.
Niall, I think you're referring to EDM.
EDM, sorry?
You mean EDM?
Like, they literally started Chicago, like house music in Chicago and Detroit, and they then pretend like it's some exotic thing that they
Why not claim that? They love claiming other people's stuff, like their land and stuff. Like, why not just claim house music for yourself?
Well, I think Drake is game for claiming anything as his own if he wants. So,
well, he's allowed. Well, Beyonce, should we take a listen to the Beyonce track?
Go on, so. Go on,
let's
so.
Let's do it.
Ain't taking no flicks, but the whole click snap. There's a whole lot of people in the house trying to smoke with a yak in your mouth. And we back outside. You said you outside, but you ain't that outside. Worldwide hoodie with the mask outside. In case you forgot how we act outside. Got motivation. I'm gonna find me a new foundation.
Okay, so this dropped yesterday. Tuesday this week. Song is called Break My Soul. The album Renaissance is out on July 29th. Certainly this song samples two songs. One, Robin S, his big dance hit Show Me Love, which is one that's been sampled a lot recently, I guess. But this uses it in a much more fractured or individual way that you can't quite recognize it, but it does have the same. It's the same. Same tones, same synth tones are in it. And then Big Frida, who was also appeared in Formation in 2016, their song Explode, the New Orleans bounce artist, also, as you can hear on that song as well. So produced by Beyonce, The Dream, Tricky Stewart, and Jay-Z. So what do you think it is, Andrea? I think I'm feeling a lukewarm six or five on maybe.
I think I'm largely uninterested in it. I'm so sad. Like, I love Beyonce and I do not blame her for, like, I think it's fine. I think it's probably a good decision, like a good business decision on her part to move into this sound and this space. But I don't know. I don't find the melody engaging. I have a lot of problems with the lyrics. I think it's a lot easier to quit your job if you're Beyonce Knowles. And to kind of have that sort of like, oh, let's just all be free. Let's all quit our jobs. You know, it's, well, there's a lot of other stuff. Maybe we'll do an episode about it. There's just a lot of other stuff about her, like not coming to the table when there was looking like there was going to be like industrial action and stuff within like her companies and places that she's worked with and stuff. So I'm just a bit like, Beyonce. No.
We all have the same number of hours in the day, including Beyonce. Come on.
I know. But I mean, she never said that, but it kind of just feels a bit like, I don't know. It feels a bit nothing.
Are you saying Beyonce is out of touch? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, Beyonce's been out of touch since she was in Destiny's Child. There's no way you could remain in touch if you're Beyonce, and that's fair. I don't begrudge her that. But like, I'm not excited by this. It sounds like a lot of other like dance or house music that I've heard over the years that I have also found uninteresting. It's the melody that gets me. I just don't really like her voice on this song. And I don't find the music itself very interesting, and it doesn't bring me any joy to. Oh, excuse me. See, I'm wrecking the gaff. It doesn't bring me any joy to say any of that, because I love her, but this ain't it.
Yeah, I guess my point about this song is like, okay, it's the first single off the album. It doesn't feel like it. It feels like a song that was like maybe tied into something.
like a TV show or a film.
Yeah,
or
I agree. Yeah.
More like that. So,
but or, then again, or like a placeholder, like in between albums or something. It doesn't feel like a big statement.
Could we, I mean, but are we expecting, do we should, is it fair for us to always expect big statements? You know what I mean? From,
well, I think it is from an artist like Beyonce, who like, in order to release this song, had this whole social media strategy of like deleting all of her, profile pictures across all her social media accounts, and then like just being very cryptic on social media, deleting old posts and stuff, knowing that fans will get all up in a frenzy about that. And yeah, I think it's fair to expect a bit of a statement after she does all of that. Like obviously with her self-titled album and with Formation, they were drops. So we didn't know that the self-titled album was going to come out. And like, I feel like that kind of worked very well for her. Maybe we're just not used to having a Beyonce kind of like promo cycle in the run up to an album, because we haven't had one in so long. But it's the song for me is just uninteresting. If it came on and I was, you know, I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, if it came on and I was at one of the tents, one of the dance tents at the festival of the weekend, I'd be like, yeah, it wouldn't give me the same feeling of joy as if I heard like any other Beyonce song, even remixed or whatever. I just don't really feel like she's saying that much to me that I can, like every time in the song she tells me to quit my job, I'm like, why are you telling me that? Like, what is the purpose
of character?
You?
I'm playing a character.
Yeah. But like, what are you playing, a poor person? Like what is it that you're doing here, Beyonce? Like, if you want to do something for workers' rights, you can do something for workers' rights. And I don't think this song is it. It just feels a bit tonally strange.
They work me so hard. And I was like,
yeah,
your company.
Who's working you hard? You're your own boss. Like, I don't know. And again, like, I love Beyonce and I've defended a lot of her kind of decisions in the past when it comes to this kind of stuff. But like, I just think that this is tonally a bit of a misstep for me.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what the album's like as well.
Oh yeah, I'm still very excited for the album. And if it is a kind of a disco record, I hope that there's more interesting compositions on it, because the beat here doesn't do anything for me either.
It's interesting that the Pitchfork review of this track kind of frames it as some sort of like, Beyonce is here to shake us out of our like quarantine insomnia and our like...
No, Dua Lipa already did that.
Yeah, well, our big like post-pandemic, like she's gonna sort it all out for us kind of thing. It's like, and then...
Oh, okay, I haven't read that review.
Yeah, combined with like, you know, her attempt to assuage widespread depression and crushing stress while acknowledging the predicament in which many of our non-zillionaire listeners find themselves. So I don't know if that's true or not.
I mean, I don't know if you should be like applauding people for acknowledging predicaments of the working class. Like, it's not, that's not good enough. I'm sorry. But like, no,
the wider point is, and it's something that we were like the Discord brought up yesterday, is like song to summer discourse isn't really very... obvious at the moment, because I think we're still in a strange time. I think, you know, while we got back to festivals and we were out with gigs again, people are still getting COVID. My friends are still getting COVID as well.
Absolutely.
And people aren't ready for like the full on, like all this roaring 20s stuff that people kept talking about. Like, it obviously didn't happen. And those things are happening in retrospect, not in the moment. But, and we're still very much in the moment here, coming out of our shells. So, and I think that's okay. And maybe what we needed was an album of Beyonce bops and Drake bangers. Like, who knew? But like, maybe not. But maybe we'll find out. But certainly the Drake one just do it for me. But look, more than anything, I'm just happy that we all got out. The two of us especially got out. And all the Discord lads got out. And we all had fun.
Yeah,
and
me too.
You know, back to it. Back to it.
Back to it now. Yeah. So, thanks everyone for contributing your thoughts on all of the festivals that you've been to. And as well, there was a lot of lovely reviews of gigs that we didn't get to read out from over the past little while. So do join the Discord if you enjoy reading reviews from other people of gigs.
Good reports of Phoebe Bridgers as well on Monday.
Loads of stuff. And loads of just chats as well. Oh, yeah. I started a little book channel in there that I need to go and update as well. So Yeah, it's a lovely spot. Patreon.com/
Yeah, patreon.com/
And if you want to email us, podcast@nileandnine.com, we'd love to hear from you.
Lovely. So we're going to be back next week talking about our favorite music of the last month as well. I'm going off to see Primal Scream tonight, actually, as it happens.
Enjoy.
Doing Screamadelica in full. A bit of a, I presume.
I thought Screamadelica was going to be in the Aviva tonight. That's a Harry Styles joke. About teen girls. No. If you're going to Harry Styles tonight, have a great time. Have a bop. Have a lovely time. And I'm not jealous at all.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Andrea, go forth and grow your hair and get a perm into it. Maybe Kate Bush's song. Maybe Run Up the Hill's song of the summer. Maybe that's all.
I think, like, no matter what happens this summer, Running Up the Hill is a song of the summer. I think there's no way of escaping it, and that's fine by me.
I am never going to get
best summer ever.
Get annoyed with that song or pissed
I'll
off
never be sick of it. Never. It will never happen. Never. So, okay. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.